Person of Leverage, written by Galaxy Soup, and read by Flower Parish. This is a Leverage and Person of Interest crossover, rated for general audiences, featuring the characters Alec Hardison and Harold Finch. Summary: Victim or perpetrator, if your number's up, we'll find you. We provide leverage. Hardison's phone rings just as he's sitting down at his computer. It's an unknown number, and for a moment, he nearly ignores it. But he's always had a natural curiosity, and it could be a client or an old contact. Given the number of scumbags in the world, they're hardly hurting for business. But now that Nate and Sophie have retired, and it's just him and Parker and Elliot running things, there's an added edge of uncertainty to everything they do. They're still a kick-ass team, don't get him wrong. But still, it's kind of like moving out for the first time and realizing what paying your own rent actually means. Okay, granted, in Hardison's world, rent is still something that mostly happens to other people, but the analogy still stands. Given the laundry list of identities his chosen lifestyle has handed him, he goes for a non-committal yes when he answers the phone. Short, sweet, unrevealing, and he can turn it into just about any accent once he figures out who's on the other side. "Mr. Hardison, good morning," a man's voice says on the other end of the phone. "I apologize for contacting you without a proper introduction, but I believe I have a business proposal that you and your associates will find quite rewarding." Hardison frowns. The man's voice is dry and precise, the kind of voice that belongs to a paper pusher or an accountant, somebody with a boring job that revolves entirely around details. He immediately imagines someone with a shirt that's always buttoned and neatly tucked in, and glasses that never get smudgy. "And you are?" "You may call me Mr. Finch," the man says, with just the barest pause to indicate that he's made the name up on the spot. "Like you and your associates, I am in the business of protecting people. My operations are based on the East Coast, but it has recently come to my attention that there is a need for the services I provide in your area as well. I realize that it would be foolish of you to trust my word, so I have sent you the details of some of our activities, a resume, as it were. Please check your email." Right on cue, Hardison's email dings. Not one of his dummy emails, not the one tied to his WoW account or online shopping, but the private one he mostly uses for annoying Elliot and sending lolcats to Parker. He runs a quick check on the message and its attachments, and then opens it. "I do not wish to either curtail or infringe on your usual activities, Mr. Hardison," Mr. Finch continues. "My area of expertise lies in determining when premeditated crimes will occur and intervening in time to protect the innocent parties. It is certainly different from your usual Robin Hood modus operandi, but not, I think, inimical, and your team already possesses the necessary skills and, shall we say, moral certainty to be quite effective." Hardison dedicates part of his attention to monitoring what Mr. Finch is saying and uses the rest to initiate a backtrace on the email and glance through the information Finch has sent. Finch and whoever he might work with took down Vertanen Pharmaceuticals, huh? Interesting. Hardison's had Vertanen on a watch list for a while because of their hinky data practices, but since nobody's made a formal complaint or come to them for help, he'd never paid them much attention. "What I propose is a data exchange," Finch continues. "I have no interest in overseeing your operations, and how you choose to act on the information I give you is up to you." The backtrace stalls out in Azerbaijan, neatly derailed by a bit of coding that makes Hardison's mouth water. Whoever this guy is, he's a hell of a programmer. "You will be given the social security number of a person who is shortly to be involved in a dangerous crime. It may be the victim, it may be the perpetrator. All I can promise is that the threat will be real and action will be required." Hardison scrolls through a few more of the cases the man sent him. Holy crap, he was behind that dirty cop takedown and the SP9 money laundering thing. And oh, sweet Jesus, blacking out half the cell phones in Manhattan. That would have meant hacking into the DHS's emergency system. Hardison scrolls further. There are some examples of Finch's coding and specs for some of his equipment, and Hardison goes a little lightheaded. "I understand and encourage you to talk this over with your associates before you come to a decision. That, plus whatever he would have had to do to find Hardison and access his private email account. Hardison wants to talk to this guy for, like, ever. He wants to pick his brain and compare notes and offer himself up as a freaking Padawan. May the original trilogy forgive him. "Oh my god, will you marry me?" he blurts, and then claps his hand over his mouth in horror. "Sadly, I must decline, although I assure you I'm very flattered," Finch says, after a moment of frozen silence. "Okay," Hardison says in a strangled voice. "Yeah, I'll talk it over with my friends. It does sound really interesting and very much up our alley and everything, and, even if it doesn't pan out, kudos to you, man. You're doing a really great job." "Thank you," Finch says gravely. "May I also extend congratulations to you for your work on Damien Moreau? I found it quite inspirational. I assume, however, that Miss Devereaux was not actually injured." "Oh no, she's fine," Hardison says. "Hey, I'll call my guys and get back to you, okay?" "Excellent. Have a good day, Mr. Hardison," Finch says, and the line goes dead. Hardison gives himself a moment in which to hyperventilate and feel great shame, and then he gets over it and starts thinking. A guy with this kind of mojo doesn't appear out of nowhere. Obviously, he's good at what he does, and any digital presence he has is probably both deliberate and carefully crafted, but even so, Hardison has never even heard of a Mr. Finch. It's not a handle. This guy doesn't want to be known, which for someone of his skill level is unusual. That brings up another question. Finch claims to have the ability to see when premeditated crimes are being planned. Given his resume and the brief results of the trace Hardison ran, there's no particular reason to doubt him. To acquire the kind of data that would give him those results, though, would be a massive undertaking and would certainly require surveillance on a level that Hardison could only... holy shit. After 9/11, the government had tried to build machines that would track that kind of data and come to some of those conclusions, and had failed miserably. But there have always been rumors, what-ifs posted to conspiracy message boards, a sort of digital urban legend. What if the government succeeded? What if we're being watched? A machine that could find terrorists? Well, terrorists plan like normal people plan. Someone would have had to teach the machine to tell the difference. But what would happen to all the other data? Where would it go? How could anyone sit by and ignore it? Hardison's email pings again. "I should warn you, Mr. Hardison," the message says, "that despite your natural curiosity and the fact you would undoubtedly like to know more about me and the source of my information, I am a very private person. I would appreciate your discretion in this matter." "I really understand that, believe me," Hardison writes back after a moment's thought, and then picks up his phone. "Hey guys, I think I've got something for us. How fast can you make it to the brew pub?" The end.